You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. Fans of poetry and the Central Valley's literary scene certainly know the name Brian Turner. The acclaimed poet taught here in Fresno, he's now entering the world of music with a new project with his group, the Interplanetary Acoustic Team. He gained national honors for his poetry in his award-winning collection of poems, Here Bullet, inspired by his time in the Iraq War. Now this new music collection brings together his musical ambitions and poetry from his late wife, poet Elise Kuznet. He joins us now on the phone. Brian, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Joe. I appreciate it.
Talking about this new project, people know you as a poet. How does a poet make the transition into music, or has this always been something you've been active in?
Well, you know, I was born in Visalia, and I was raised in Fresno and Madera counties, and I was a Madera Coyote, you know, back in the day, and I learned the trumpet, and I used to play military funerals there in the valley when I was a boy, and then that shifted to bass guitar, and I used to play on Blackstone Avenue, I think it was Zapp's Park, and we used to play at the place called the Cadillac Club. And I was in a couple of rock bands and blues bands with some folks there. Sadly, my best friend who passed away, Brian Foyt, who's an amazing guitarist there in town, and Bill Toole's still there, and he's done some stuff for this project. In fact, it's connected to with art that not on the music. He's a guitarist, but he did some art for the album. You know, it started with music and writing at the same sort of at the same time, but the group activity was music, and the solo activity was writing. And then writing over the course of my life has been the through line, with music sort of appearing in waves throughout my life.
So the idea to bring these two together may not entirely be new, but this project certainly is, and also incorporating the work of your late wife, Elise Kuznet. Tell me about how this project itself developed.
I had no idea that anything like this would come out of that. It was pretty bleak, and I can't imagine not grieving, actually. But the problem is, one of the things I want to do, once I started thinking about one of her poems that the title comes from, which is 1111, Me Smiling, that comes from one of her poems where it was about robots and cybernetics and kind of this futurism and stuff. And in the poem she says, in case I forget to tell you, 1001 is binary for a sigh. 1111 is me smiling. As I was thinking about that poem, this idea for the album came to me, and I realized I would use that construct of 11 as the template. So there are 11 songs on the album. In fact, the last song is 11 minutes, 11 seconds, 11 milliseconds long. So we really try to stay true to some of the binary code that her poetry evokes. So the music is in response to her language, and all the words on the album are hers, except for one British scientist in the very first song. But whether it's spoken by me or her words from recordings culled over the last couple of decades, she's narrating a journey through the album. And then myself and a lot of other musicians came together to try to create a kind of an acoustic landscape, or this landscape of sound that would be in concert with what she was saying.
Let's go ahead and listen to some of that, the initial piece from this new album, 1111, Me Smiling. This is the piece titled 1111. Brian Turner is with us today. We're listening to music from his new record. The Interplanetary Acoustic Team is the ensemble, and the piece is called 1111. Poets often put words or try to describe things that are indescribable. Music certainly is one of those things, but how would you describe this style, this sound that you're going after here?
Oddly, on Amazon, it was listed as alternative rock, which I didn't. That's not what we put it in when we went through the music distribution system and all. But we shot up to number 69 in the world for part of a day. That was amazing, an alternative rock. But I guess there's little bits of funk, many different musical genres, but the main one is sort of an electroacoustic groove, because there's a lot of modular synthesizers involved. So those who might you know, have some memory of Krautrock, for example, or K-Rock, they might find some affinity there. You know, from my background, I think Pink Floyd is probably more prevalent in some of the music, but it's hard to tell with so much modular synthesizer work that's going on. You know, that's all kind of surface stuff, and I think to really get to the heart of your question, answer it, I would say that this project is a way for me not to create a kind of tombstone or memorial to her, but a way to continue to artist to create art together. So I'm still trying to fall in love with her, and the album is an excuse for me, or an attempt by me, to find a way for others to fall in love with her too.
How does the studio process compare to the process that goes into writing one of your poems?
You know, it's almost like watching someone sketch a drawing, and then they take their pencil, they flip it upside down, start erasing parts, and then they sketch, and they start with volumes and circles, and then suddenly you have a human being appear at some point, you know? And I discovered that quite a bit with these songs. We would start out with what I thought was a song or a version of a song, but then we would erase and subtract, and then we would add again until a few months later there was the song that we now hear on the album. So that's a little bit comparative to a poem, because a poem might start, I might write 3 or 4 pages worth of a poem, and then I really only get 2 lines out of it that become the start of what will one day be a poem that I would share with others.
Sometimes when I wake, I'm shaping the world with my hands. Sometimes when I sleep, the world shapes me. Once I was energy, hiding inside the light or the shadow of light. Love rooted us together exponential.
What do you think your late wife would say about the project if she were able to hear it?
I hope she would love it. It's not her musical genre necessarily, but I think the intent and the approach, I think it would surprise her, and I think she would love it, even if it wasn't something she would normally flip to on the dial, you know. And I sure hope so.
I understand there's also some other elements to this. You have a limited edition vinyl pressing coming out with some local artists on the visual side getting involved. Tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Bill Toole, I mentioned earlier, not only is he an amazing guitar player, but he's a wonderful artist. And so I asked him to do this kind of a limited edition art as well. So he's signed and numbered them. And so I don't want to give too much away, but the vinyls, it's a beautiful album with this blue marble, kind of semi-transparent. It's a 2-LP set, and there'll be some of Bill's art in there signed, so you could take it out, and the idea is that one might frame it, for example. And then there's another thing in there that I'm not going to tell anybody about too. So there's there's more than the music, you know. There's a whole collection of related ideas. Yeah. And a lot of art, basically, sort of packed into one package. So they're stuck in customs right now at the moment. I didn't realize the process before. You know, I worked with Duophonic out of Germany, and they're making a beautiful album. But right now I have to get a broker and find a way to, well, not find a way, but I have to work with them to get them released from customs so that I can actually have the album to ship out. So that'll happen in the next week.
Things that poets don't usually have to deal with, I guess.
No, I had to start a music publishing company, too. So now I'm a publisher of music. And that was a way I could hire some musicians. On this particular project, I didn't have to hire anybody. It was all friends doing it for the love of it. But it's exactly like, as a poet, I had no idea how complicated the music industry business is.
You mentioned earlier how Amazon put your music in this category that you really didn't desire it to be labeled as. Not that there was something necessarily bad, but it just was a label that was placed. It seems like music does that often. Do you think poetry does that as well? I often hear you referred to as a war poet or a military poet, given your experience in the armed forces and then your collections of poetry inspired by your service. Is that a problem for you?
I don't think it's a problem. I guess my younger self, you know, I went to Fresno State and I was writing poems there, and I wrote about 7 manuscripts before my first published book, and they were on a wide variety of subjects. So my younger self would get mad at me now if I whined about it, you know, because the idea that someone in a short life would sit down to pay attention to something that any one of us has done is an honor in the first place. And then to couch it in a certain frame to say, oh, this, you know, this makes me think of contemporary war lit or war writers of the past, for example, and talking about conflict and, you know, human suffering and those types of things. It's an honor right off the bat. But I think I do get to the point, what you're getting at. You know, it's just the landscape of the poems is war. So you can see the explosions, the accoutrements of war, the uniforms, the helicopters, and the different things you expect from a war or a conflict zone. But it's not actually the subject. The subject is love and loss. So I could turn my gaze and look at Baltimore or, you know, sort of war-ravaged America, where industry has driven people out of their jobs and their homes are in shambles and their lives are being crushed by the chase to survive, you know. And in a sense, it might look, someone might say, frame it as labor poetry or something similar to that. But again, that would be the landscape. The subject would still be their actual lives and the people inside of history. And the subject would be love and loss. And that's my real through line, I think.
You wrote the poem titled The Hurt Locker before the film, years before the film of that name came out. And you've talked about this. People ask you about it all the time. I know whether there's a connection there. And in talking about it, I've seen you quoted saying that you're in some way a little uncomfortable about that because you don't think that's your best poem. Tell me about how that feels to have that particular work cited by so many people and your own feelings about that.
You know, I worked with Ron Charles at the Washington Post. He stepped down from there now, but this became a big question in some ways, at least for my life. And he was able to help sort of articulate the lineage of that story. So it's pretty long for this for your show today. So, but if people want, I've actually put a link on my website that sort of goes to the history of that, of how it is or it is not connected and all that kind of thing. I think for me, it's I guess part of me doesn't want to those who might say, "Oh, here's the poem that's meaningful from him, from me." You know, I don't want to undermine their appraisal of the work because it means they sat down to have an opinion of it. But I just don't think the poem, it doesn't do nearly as much of work as some of the others do, I think. And I think some of the others are more memorable in content and space, what they do. You know, a poem is the word stanza means room in Italian. And so poems are stanza by stanza, they're architecture, you know, so there's these architectural blueprints from an experience. And as a blueprint, I think that one does some work, it has some punch to it, but it doesn't have many layers underneath it. It does have some mystery maybe to return to, but I think a good poem or any kind of art, a sculpture, a movie, when you step out of the movie theater, a beautiful film draws you back in to see it again, and when you watch it again, then you pull some more meaning from it. And a poem has to do the same kind of work for me.
And one could almost say the same about music, could they not? Do you go back and listen to this record, transitioning back to the new work with your Interplanetary Acoustic team? Do you get different things out of it, hearing it a different time?
I do, especially because I suppose for me, it changes with moods and spaces. So, for example, I've been driving around the country the past month, basically, and in different states I've put it on and listened to the album at different times of day or night. And I think my part for me is because, you know, Elisa's voice is there, and so I'm listening to her. And so when the album is on, for me, she's in the room, she's in the car, she's on the journey, and she's alive. And so it's... I could probably play it every day, and no problem. You know, but I'm trying to step outside of myself and think of how others might approach it. And I hope that they might find other layers. It's a very layered album, and each song has, if you listen carefully, you'll hear other elements. It isn't like a three piece jazz, you know, band or like a blues band where you can just very quickly, you can suss out what the drums are doing, you can hear the bass, the guitar, the singer. This one has quite a bit of layers of things that are softer and off in the background that maybe people will hear on subsequent listenings.
So where do you go from here? Is this an entree into more music professionally down the road, or is it more of a one-off?
No, I hope so, mostly because I don't want to stop listening to her, you know, and I want, I think there's so much that, you know, she had cancer, and from 2013 to 2016, she fought it. If you were with her in the last year or so of her life, she would have said to you that she felt that she was just coming into her own as an artist. And so I've made a promise that that I intend to keep, and that's to make sure that her work continues to develop and be shared. And so I'm trying to find ways for new work of hers to appear. And it's really tricky because I don't have access to her agency and the choices made. So at every step and every choice I make, I could be making massive mistakes that she wouldn't have made. So I have to try to think as much as possible, like, how would she approach the art whenever I'm working with her manuscript, like her book of poems? Her next book comes out in May of 2019. And then there's another album of music I'm working on, too.
Again, we're talking with poet and musician Brian Turner, a Valley native. His new musical project with the band The Interplanetary Acoustic Team is called 1111 Me Smiling. It's a collaboration with his late wife, poet Elise Kuznets, and it is available wherever you get your music, Amazon, Spotify. There's also a physical copy on vinyl that is due out soon, and you can find more at interplanetaryacousticteam.com. Brian Turner, also an award-winning poet, known best perhaps for his collection of poems, Here Bullet, work inspired by his experiences during the Iraq War. Brian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's an honor, Joe. Thank you. Hope to see you soon.
Likewise.
Can you hear me?